This is Samuel's Persiflage, episode number 11 for December 2006. So that means we've managed to get through 10 episodes. That's great. Hello and welcome to Samuel's Persiflage. I'm Samuel Gordon Stewart. You're probably used to being by me by now. I'm your host. And it's great to be here in December as we quickly approach Christmas. And that's the main theme of the show today. This month we've got pretty much a Christmassy show. That's, in fact, I think you'll notice a few things have changed around a little bit this month, and there's a few things in there which you probably won't hear next month, but they're a bit Christmassy, so I hope you enjoy them. We do have plenty coming up today, though. Bill Grady, the host of the You Are the Guest podcast, actually done a bit of a networking thing with him, two interviews in one go, really. He's already published part of the interview on his show. I was in fact the guest host on his show there, interviewing him. So that interview is also used for this show. It's funny, I actually asked him for an interview on this show, and just before we started recording, he sort of said to me, well, we could sort of do both shows at the same time. And I thought, good idea, we'll do that. So it's networking. I do have to wonder if any other podcasts have actually done that before. I guess they might have, but it's interesting. Maybe you know. Podcast@samuelgordonstewart.com is the email address for that. We do have another one of those ads from years gone by, and I know that one listener in particular will like this one, because from memory he did tell me once that it was his favourite ad. So a couple updates to some previous topics we've covered. We'll go through them a bit later on. The thought for the month I've actually left to someone else to do this month. Stick around, I think you'll like it. And of course there's a persiflage puzzle and a few more things as well, so stick around, I hope you can enjoy it. This is Samuel's Persiflage. Could read my show notes properly, I would have known that I actually need to give you the persiflage puzzle, and I shouldn't be pressing buttons before I do that. So we might get on with it. The persiflage puzzle for this month, there are three words of 9 letters, 3 letters, and 5 letters, respectively. The clue is, it's the first person to write about Santa's wife, Mrs. Claus. So, most of these clues, I think, give it away to some people, but hopefully there's plenty of people who it hasn't given it away to, and hopefully it's not just me who didn't know this. So, let's draw 5 letters out of the hat, and let's start with, oh, well, that's going to give it away. It's the letter that's in the puzzle most often. It's the letter E for egg, and it has a few of them. In the first word, it is the 5th letter and the 9th letter. In the second word, it is the 2nd and the 3rd letter. And in the 3rd word, it is the 4th letter. Might as well be every letter in the puzzle. It's just about everywhere. Let's pull out another letter, and it's D for dog, and it's not in there. So we'll go for another one, and T for triceratops. Why did that come into my mind? I don't know. I don't want to know. It's the 3rd letter of the 1st word. What's the next one here? It's a G for goat. That one's not in there. And one more. A for alphabet. It's the second letter of the first word. It's also the second letter of the third word. So that's almost every letter in the puzzle. Oh dear, we've probably run out of letters now. Oh, we'll see how you go with that one. I'll give you some more letters a little bit later on. As Christmas fast approaches, we're once again reminded that not everyone in the world celebrates Christmas. That being said, Christmas is an important part of Western culture, and most people involved in Western culture tend to get wrapped up in Christmas anyway. Joining us from the city with bright days ahead, Fort Dodge in Iowa, it's the host of You Are the Guest, Bill Grady. Bill, welcome.
Thank you, Samuel, and it is wonderful to be on your show.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. You had me on your show earlier in the year, and from memory I played an extract of that on my show, so it's good to be able to return the favor.
And it was a very popular show. We had a lot of people listening to that show and had some very favorable comments, so hopefully I'll be able to return the same favor.
Okay, well, I hope so too. So, what does Christmas mean to you personally, Bill?
Oh, I think it brings back a lot of great memories of some Christmases past, but I think as I get older, I'm less involved in the consumerism than I was in my 20s. I'm 45 right now, and so I guess the thing that really means a lot to me is getting in touch with some old friends during this time and catching up, and then also spending time with family. So that's what Christmas means to me.
You mentioned the commercialism of Christmas there, and I suppose in many ways that's actually become part of the Western culture of Christmas, and it almost seems counterproductive having it there at times because, you know, the moment Easter ends, you're pretty much being bombarded with Christmas things and Christmas decorations, it seems. Do you think that the consumerism of Christmas is making some people less interested in Christmas, or perhaps more interested in the religious side of Christmas?
Oh, I think they're just two completely different animals. I don't think the consumerism has any connection with religion or vice versa. I think what's interesting from what I've seen here in the States is that the retailers keep starting a little bit earlier each year. And it used to be that there was this unwritten rule that you never talked about Christmas before Halloween, which was October 31st here in the States. And all of a sudden, you know, over the last couple years, the Christmas decorations have been showing up the week of Halloween or the week before. And it's like, okay, I know that Christmas shopping season or the Christmas shopping season is a big retail season, but are we going to get to the point when we start talking about Christmas in September? I hope not, but you know, it just always seems like there will be this upmanship that continues to make the retail shopping season come earlier and earlier, and I think that's kind of disturbing.
I suppose here in Australia it's probably very similar to the States. We seem to have the moment Christmas ends, the Easter eggs are out on the shelves, and then the moment Easter ends, we start having a few sales, and there's the sort of mid-year sales, and then not long after that, you start to see Christmas slowly making its way into the stores until, as you say, by September, October, you're starting to see the Christmas decorations go up and the flyers and catalogues going out saying, buy now for Christmas, and it never seems to end.
So what do you think is the catalyst for that in your country?
Well, I think it's just the retailers want to make money. They want to just basically have their promotions going so that, I don't know, maybe they think people will forget that their stores exist if they're not constantly advertising something and associating themselves with some holiday or some event.
I think you're absolutely correct on that. I think that the push to be successful in business, and especially because of the competition, you always have to have something going. Hmm. And especially for the big retailers that have stockholders and they're always trying to push the new fad, or they're trying to push more sales, more. Well, you know, how do you outdo last year? Well, you outdo it by having, you know, something bigger and better. And, you know, where does it end, I guess, is the big question. And but the other thing is, do we want it to end? What kind of a black mark would that be on our economy if it did end? Who knows?
It would be a very big hole in the economy, I would think, because Christmas is probably the busiest time of the retail year. Everyone seems to rush in the few weeks leading up to Christmas, get a bunch of presents and rush out again, and then probably rush back because they forgot some presents. So it's certainly a very busy time of the year for all of the retailers.
I know when I worked with retailers when I sold advertising that some of them, for example, jewelers, would have the majority of their business during the Christmas season. So for those type of businesses, the Christmas retail season is very important, but it's in no way connected with religion or spirituality.
Hmm. And that's another interesting thing about Christmas, is that even people who aren't religious still seem to be attracted to the celebration. Why do you think they're so attracted to it?
I think that they feel left out if they weren't. Mm. For example, I know of some families, some Jewish families that are here in town that, although they don't celebrate Christmas, they still celebrate the presents and gift giving. And it's just because it is so enveloped in the society and the community that if you don't participate in that in some way, shape, or form, you probably feel left out because you're just in the minority. And I'm sure that maybe other people throughout the country, the Muslims that you know, may experience that, or the Buddhists, or any of the other religions, you know, may just feel overwhelmed by the Christianity of this time of year.
Hmm. I have a few Muslim friends who don't celebrate Christmas as such, but they still do have a special lunch on that day, and they will give each other a couple presents. I mean, they're not going to go overboard like the rest of us might do and put decorations up everywhere and start playing Christmas carols. They just sort of treat it as sort of a festive time of the year for that one day, even though the day itself doesn't mean an awful lot to them.
Oh, I agree with that.
Hmm. And, of course, there are plenty of cultures who don't celebrate Christmas, and I suppose, therefore, there'd be many parts of the world where those cultures are dominant, and I suppose if we were to go over there and celebrate Christmas, we would be in the minority. Do you think that we are, as a society, as tolerant of those cultures as perhaps we should be?
I don't see us being intolerant, if you want to take the opposite side of that. I don't think that because other people don't celebrate it that we look down upon them or that they're ridiculed or anything like that. I just think that during the holiday season that most people have the association with happiness, or that it's a time to get together, it's a time for celebration. Let me throw another twist in there, because there are a lot of people that are Christians that celebrate it, but also don't feel like celebrating because they've recently had a loss of a loved one, or there is something else going on in their lives that have kind of taken them out of the holiday spirit. So there are other factors other than not being a Christian that may prohibit you from really enjoying the season.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, it's, I'd imagine that it's very hard to be happy and festive and jolly if you have had a tragedy in the family or something along those lines. So I don't know how anyone could really celebrate Christmas like that if that did happen to them.
And the other thing that I've experienced in my life is that I've had friends that have died on or around Christmas Day. As those people have passed on, especially my friends, you know, I guess I remember them, but for the families that go through that many times, obviously, especially if somebody has passed on Christmas Day, you know, they always have that reminder that Christmas Day is also the anniversary of that person's passing. And so you know, that can really give somebody a damper for the holiday season, and it's probably something that never goes away.
Mm. Well, I know that for a lot of people here in Australia, Christmas Day has those sort of connotations because of Cyclone Tracy, which went through Darwin on Christmas Day quite a few years ago now, but nonetheless, it's still something that's very fresh in a lot of people's minds, and I would imagine it would be even more vivid on those on Christmas Day. And probably not a very, very happy day for them. I don't know quite how you move on from that, or if you move on from that at all, but it is obviously any particular day of the year can have difficult meanings for you, but I suppose to some extent it can be harder if it is on Christmas Day because there's almost a peer pressure on you to be happy and jolly.
Absolutely, and especially if everybody is around you and they're just kind of casually asking you all the questions such as, you know, what are you doing for Christmas? You know, oh, you know, how come you're not happy? And and it can be very tough for people that just aren't in the holiday season because maybe they're missing a loved one.
Hmm. Well, do you have a story you could share with us about Christmas?
Like a funny story or a serious story or something like that?
We might go with a funny story.
Okay. Okay. I have a serious story, too. And,
well, we
and
could do that one,
I'll,
too, I suppose.
I'll tack that on the end. But I remember as a kid that maybe I was like 6 or 7 years old, and the doorbell rang, and I went to the door, and there was Santa Claus. And Santa Claus was on my doorstep, and he was asking me what I wanted for Christmas. And it was probably, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. And he's asking these questions, and my mom or my dad, I can't remember which one, kind of called out to me and said, you know, who are you talking to? And I said, I'm talking to Santa Claus, and he's asking me what I want for Christmas. And so I'm going on, and he asked me a couple more questions, and then he goes on down the road, and I close the door. And my parents start discussing it between themselves, and it's like, well, maybe we should call the police and let them know that some guy is going door to door asking kids what he wants, what they want for Christmas. And I'm sure out of concern, they didn't know if he was, you know, drunk or if he was a burglar or he was just a guy that's just kind of going door to door. But
all the things that would run through your mind in that situation.
That's right. But as a kid, I'm thinking, hey, you know what? Santa Claus. Don't call the cops on Santa Claus because he won't bring me anything. And so that, you know, they called the cops and like, you know, and the police came out, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm screwed. They called the cops on Santa. He's not going to bring me anything. And, of course, as you get older, you realize that it was probably just some drunk guy just making the rounds. So.
Well, perhaps the mayor of the town or the council decided they'd hire someone to just walk around and spread some Christmas cheer that Christmas.
I don't think so. I think it's a guy... I think it was a guy that was in a red suit that had a lot to drink that said, hey, it'd be fun just to go up and down the street pretending to be Santa Claus.
Yeah, I can't imagine the council spending money on it somehow.
That's right. It's like, well, why spend money on something that a drunk will do for free?
That sounds like a very good policy. I'm going to wait to Well, I'll give that a few weeks, and I bet I'll hear a politician say that now.
That's right. Hey, kids, you know what? If you really want a great experience around Christmas, come over down to Bob's Bar and, you know, visit with Santa. He's had a few beers, and he'll promise you anything.
So he also had a serious story.
Well, one of the things that I remember, especially as a high school kid, was that I was in the choir, and what we used to do is we used to go to, like, the nursing homes, and we would sing carols for the nursing home residents. And it was one of the first experiences that I remember that said, you know, not everybody is at home spending Christmas with their family, and some people have a lot of problems. And so I remember that as a very eye-opening experience of saying that, you know, others don't have it as well, or how should I put this? Other people aren't as well off as you are because they're not spending their Christmases with their family and everything. And instead of getting really sad and depressed about it, I just decided that during that time I was there that I was going to talk to as many people as I could after we got done caroling, because I would think that they would want a conversation. And I was amazed at how many people I could make smile, that I could kind of light up, and if anything, they kind of maybe perked up for a few minutes. But that's one of those serious things that I remember about Christmas, is that if you reach out to people, especially for those people that are having a hard time during the Christmas season, that they really do appreciate that.
My godparents they work in community care, and so each Christmas they put together a big lunch, and a lot of their friends come together and help them out with the lunch. And they pretty much invite all of the people they help out in community care who don't have anyone else to share Christmas with. They all come together, and there's, I'd say, probably 40 or 50 people all gather there for a big Christmas lunch. And, you know, everyone gets to meet people they probably met last year or people they might not have met before. And everyone seems to have a good time. So it is nice, one of the nice things about Christmas, that people can get together and share time with each other that they generally, well, people they wouldn't normally meet, and people they might not, if they met in the street normally, they might not even talk to.
And I think that is wonderful to hear about. And you know, as those people are out there, if we could, you know, if everybody could do something nice, you know, just to one person, make their day a little bit better, then, you know, over a period of time, then you really made an influence to a lot of people.
As mentioned at the start of the interview, you're the host of the You Are the Guest podcast. Would you like to explain to the listeners of Samuel's Persiflage a bit about what that is?
Well, it's a program I started back in July of 2005.
So
and
you beat me by 6 months.
Pardon?
You beat me to starting a podcast by 6 months.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. And but, you know, anytime that you start within a new media's first couple of years, I think you can be considered a pioneer. So anytime that, for example, I started 9 months after Adam Curry, the godfather of podcasting, started, and during that time you think, oh, geez, you know, I was way behind. But if you really look at the length of the media, it's like, you know, that was just 9 months after the whole thing got started. So the fact that the show started off as just kind of a grassroots program with a basic idea of let's talk to everyday people and let's use the website as kind of the conduit to bring people in where people can write in and apply to be the guest, I think was just an experimentation to see if anybody would be attracted to that type of program. And what I've been pleasantly surprised by is how many people from not just America, but around the world say, hey, that's a good idea and I'd like to be on the program. So what we've done and where we've probably changed over the last 18 months or so is that we've gone from, you know, just tell me about yourself to, you know, tell me about what people think about politics in your side of the world, society issues, and really trying to open up this conversation that says we probably have more in common than we know about, but because of barriers between governments or barriers between the national media, we are not able to recognize that. And the fact that we can have just civil conversations and also debates about issues, I think is not only eye-opening, but also very healthy for the world in general.
Hmm. So what sort of selection process do you go through when you choose your guests? Because you must have, you must receive an awful lot of emails from people who want to be the guest.
We do, and the thing that we look for is we look for somebody that can give us a little more detail. For example, we get a lot of people that will send in a note that says, I want to be on the show. And then that's it. And so at that point we say, okay, we really don't know enough about you. Then we have the people to the extremes that will send you 5 pages and their life story. And I guess more is better than none. So we kind of take a look at that. I guess one of the things that I choose, or one of the criteria that I use to choose is, does this person have a angle or a viewpoint that would be of interest to our listeners? And is this something also that because of the place that they live or because of a country that they live or something else in their life, does it have a connection with something that is in the news today? And when I start doing shows in America and something comes up abroad, then we'll pick a guest from another country. If something is a top or hot issue in America, then it's like, okay, maybe we can go to either this experience or this part of the country and get their view.
Okay. Would you like to ask me some questions, Bill?
Absolutely. Tell me about one of your family traditions during the Christmas season.
Well, I suppose really our biggest tradition is just that lunch with my godparents, helping out with that. But things we've already discussed, that I'll try and find something else. There's a few other things we do. I mean, nothing particularly special. It's just each year we do the whole leaving milk and cookies out for Santa. And actually, one thing we do every year is the night before Christmas on the television here, there's actually a Carols by Candlelight program. So each year we make sure that we're all around to be able to watch that and to sort of sing along with the carols, and we'll turn the lights off and turn the Christmas tree lights on so the room sort of flashes a bit, but it's a good time of the year. And actually, we also have some Christmas bells hanging up just near the kitchen, which play the various Christmas carols. So on the Christmas morning, we'll always have that turned on.
Are you ready for question number two?
I am, Bill.
For those people around the world that do not celebrate Christmas because of a different religion or a different belief or the fact that they don't get the whole Christmas thing, what do you think are their misconceptions about Christmas?
Well, I think that especially for those who are of a different religion in a different part of the world, and I won't pick on any particular part of the world here, but I think they probably see it primarily as a very Christian thing. Now, the people of that religion who happen to be in a country like the US or Australia where Christmas is a very big celebration, they probably don't have that misconception, and perhaps to them they just see it as an overly commercialized thing. I think it varies for depending on the circumstances.
Question number three is actually a New Year's question.
Okay.
So looking ahead to 2007, what thing or what policy do you think needs to be changed for Australia to be a better, stronger country in the years ahead?
I think we've had one thing very recently, which has at the very least made the politics of the country stronger. The main opposition party have had a bit of a leadership coup, and they've now got a leader who seems to actually have some policies and be able to talk about issues without sounding like he's just repeating the stuff he said yesterday. So I think that we have a strong opposition now, which means there's something viable there. We've had a majority conservative government for, since the last election. So I think looking ahead now, people are actually seeing that there is a viable alternative here, and who knows, it may be in the next election, which in fact is next year, the people will vote for the alternative government, which for the last, I don't know, probably the last decade, we really haven't had a strong opposition. So it's good to finally see that, and I think that's going to help the country a lot, because even though it has been a majority conservative government, it's quite clear that an awful lot of people in the country don't actually like the government. They just voted for them because they really didn't think the opposition could pull it off. So I think that's one thing that's already happened, but it's really, I think that's one of the biggest things that can help this country going forward. I think one thing that might help US-Australia relations is the current David Hicks saga. I don't know if you hear much about that in the US, but...
No, tell me about that.
Okay.
I'd like to learn about that.
All right. David Hicks, I'm just trying to think, it was back 3-4 years ago, was caught by the US and has been locked up in Guantanamo Bay ever since. Apparently for being associated with terrorism. Now, charges have never been laid against him. He's currently, I think, a lot of people in Australia would actually like to see him tried in Australia, because at this time, I don't think many people here have much faith in the US justice system to deliver David Hicks justice. I think the general feeling here is that if a charge could have been brought against him, it would have been done by now. They just don't see any good reason why he's been sitting there for 3 or 4 years without a charge being laid against him. And, I mean, we all know that it does take time sometimes for justice systems to kick into gear and to go through a trial, but...
Does he have a history record of antisocial behavior or terrorism in your country?
No. All that we really know is that he sort of went abroad and sort of was vaguely associated with, I can't remember which terrorist group he was associated with. I think it might have been Al-Qaeda, but don't quote me on that. But in general, he wasn't really helping to plan anything. He wasn't... It's sort of a mystery in what way he was associated with the terrorist group. We just sort of know that he didn't really have any influence on it. And for the sort of details that we have, most people in Australia just don't see how he could have been locked up for so long without a charge being laid against him. So I think that if the US and Australia can work together and work that out, then I think that's going to help the US and Australia get along in the years to come.
Now, I agree with you. I think that seems a little odd that for some reason there's no charges being brought. I understand that in the the terrorism camps, that there are some very bad people. And I don't think
anyone denies that.
Yeah, right. But at the same time, you have to justify it or you have to quantify it, and you should be able to do that within 3 years.
Yes, you would certainly think so. I mean, if the police were to arrest someone here and lock them up and didn't charge them and kept them in a cell for 3 years, I think there'd be a very, very large public outcry. And in fact, there are laws against it, so it does make you wonder. Bill, it's been very good talking to you.
And the same to you.
All right, Bill, well, it's been wonderful having you on Samuel's Persiflage. I'd like to wish you and I suppose all of your family and relatives a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. How can people get to your podcast?
My podcast, well, first of all, thank you for the well wishings, and let me extend from our family too the same to your family.
That's very nice of you, Bill.
You can listen to You Are the Guest podcast at www.youaretheguest.com, and if anybody is interested in being the guest, they can just send us an email at betheguest@youaretheguest.com. We have all those details on the website. And the other project that I have as well is that I have a website called Create Ads That Work. And although it mainly deals in American media, there are some things that translate into all cultures that have mass media. And those things are good copywriting, good headline writing, good ad writing. And so if anybody in your listening audience has a question about small business advertising, they can go to my website at createadsthatwork.com, and also we have the links at the You Are the Guest site too. So those are my two projects.
And of course, from all of your experience working in the advertising field, you've got an awful lot of experience and probably know an awful lot of tips and tricks that everyone else needs to know if they're advertising.
That's right, and we've got some free samples on the site. I've also written some articles on sales, sales and training, people and management, and so we've got a little bit of everything for the person that runs their own small business.
Okay, well, we'll get people to have a look at that. It's youaretheguest.com, and what was the other one, Bill?
createadsthatwork.com.
Rightio. Bill, thank you very much for coming on to Samuel's Persiflage, and it's been an interesting experience interviewing you, because I don't know if listeners to this show are aware at this stage, but we've sort of done a double act here. There have been bits of this interview which have been for Bill's show only, and bits which have been for my show only, and bits of which have been for both shows. We've sort of done a roundabout simulcast, so in one way or another, this interview is also Bill's Christmas episode, which it's going to be fascinating to hear just how that does come out.
And thank you so much for the invitation, Samuel, and I always enjoy talking with you, and let's do this again sometime soon.
Okay, Bill, that sounds like a good idea. Thank you for coming on to Samuel's Persiflage.
Thank you for having me, and Merry Christmas!
Through an unusual networking deal, that's part of that, well, a slightly different version of that episode, of that interview rather, was actually on You Are the Guest episode number 68. There were some bits of the interview that were only for Bill's show, some which were only for my show, and actually one day, with the Bill's permission, I would like to be able to release the whole interview just so you can compare it. I thought it was very interesting. I had a bit of fun editing that. naturally you don't edit out any actual content, but interesting just editing it out so that you're only left with the bits which are for your show. It's quite an interesting process. But I didn't come here to babble about podcasting processes, although I'm sure I get plenty of emails from people who want to know it. That's the feedback section, Samuel. This is the Persiflage Puzzle. We'll go to we'll talk about emails a little bit later on. Where were we? We're up to doing four letters, and the first letter out of the hat is the letter Y for yellow, and it's not in the puzzle. So, let's see what this one is. It's the letter R for rabbit, and it is in the puzzle. It's the sixth letter of the first word. So we'll go for another letter, and it's the letter P for Peter. Not in the puzzle. One more. F for Fred. Also not in the puzzle. We got one letter there. Not too bad. Now, I did say that we were going to talk about emails, and we will do straight after we play this classic commercial.
Louis the Fly, I'm Louis the Fly, straight from rubbish tip to you. Spreading disease with the greatest of ease, straight from rubbish tip to you. I'm bad and mean and mighty unclean, afraid of no one except the man with the can of morphine. Hate that word, morphine.
One spray and Louis the Fly. Apple of his old mother's eye was Louis. Poor dead Louis, Louis the Fly. A victim of morphine. Morphine.
Samuel's Persiflage is the feedback. Send your emails to podcast at samuelgordonstewart.com.
Now, what was I saying? I was talking about podcasting procedures and how I get emails about it. It's interesting how I do get emails about what I use to record the show. One that does come up an awful lot is what program I use for the interviews. And as I've said a few times, it's Skype. Skype to Skype calls are absolutely free, and the sound quality is pretty good most of the time. Of course, you can also do interviews with people using phones as well, which costs a few cents, but it's worth it. And the best thing of all, you don't have to worry about setting up phone equipment at your end. You just have to worry about recording the sound somehow. And the process can be a little bit complicated. I actually trialled a bit of software rather than dealing with cabling for that interview with Bill. I think that turned out pretty well. So, I'm happy with that. It sounds just like it did when I was interviewing him, so that's all you can really ask for. But, yes, I digress. It's the Feedback Podcast at samuelgordonstewart.com is the email address for written or spoken feedback. Of course, you can also automate the spoken feedback process by clicking on the Send Spoken Feedback link on the Samuel's Persiflage website at samuelgordonstewart.com. That'll take you to another page where you can record your feedback there. We had a small issue with that, actually, recently. Someone actually did send some feedback via that. For some reason, when I went to play it, it wouldn't play, it wouldn't download, it did a few days later. I don't know what the problem was there. I guess the people who provide that service at odeo.com just had a few issues on that day, and that's understandable. That happens to all of us, I suppose. But all of those methods are quite acceptable, and I'd love to have your feedback on the show. And I've previously been accused of talking too much, and I've managed to do it again, haven't I? They're probably right, I do talk an awful lot, but that's what the show is about really, isn't it? Now, we have some feedback this month, and I just have to find the right bit of paper, and I believe this... What's that? Oh, I know what that is. I don't know why it's there, but it is. Alright, this is the bit of paper I'm looking for. It's the feedback, and I've buried another bit of paper here. I'm going really well. Alrighty then. Total Cynic writes, the best persiflage ever, and I'm not being cynical. Thank you, Total Cynic. That's very nice of you, and it's good to know that you're listening. Colonel Moodus writes, a very professional this month, Sam. I particularly enjoyed nutting out the persiflage puzzle. Well, I'm glad you did, Colonel. I enjoy putting together the persiflage puzzle, and I think it helps keep people interested as the show goes on. So I'm glad you enjoyed it. Who else have we got here? Jay writes, Jay's actually responding to something I put in the show notes, because we have a high-quality version of the show and also a low-quality version. The low-quality version there, of course, so that it's a smaller file, so people who are on dial-up or on other restricted bandwidth services can still get it. I generally write, there is also a low-quality version for the bandwidth impaired. Jay writes, bandwidth impaired, how very PC. Those of you not aware, PC being an abbreviation of politically correct, yeah, it is, but, well, I could write dial-up, but there's a few dozen different services here, which are, of course, lower bandwidth there, so I think bandwidth impaired is quite good. There are a few other comments about it in there, so, yeah, I think it's worth a chuckle anyway. Captain Flume writes, I have a suggestion. Seeing as the special anniversary xylophone has been unearthed over at 2CA, do you think, Sam, you could give the original Persiflage intro a special run next month? Well, yes, the anniversary xylophone, they did find that at the 2CA birthday. In fact, Paul Blunt, who we interviewed last month, well, he seemed to have quite a lot of fun playing with the xylophone, and I have slipped the Samuel's Persiflage, the original intro, a bit of it in here somewhere. Did I play it already? I'm not entirely sure now, but it's in there somewhere, so if I haven't already played it, keep listening and you will hear it. What else has Captain Flume written here? This month's Persiflage did move at a crackling pace, like a Stephen King novel. No, the letter P is not there either. Let's try with another one, shall we? I don't know quite what he's going on about there, but yeah, it did move pretty quickly. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Now, there was some other feedback here. Oh, yes, now, I've lost the exact reference, but on another website somewhere, and as I've said previously, if someone writes something about Samuel's Persiflage somewhere else and it's worthy of being in the feedback segment, I might include it. They wrote something about me when I played the Vegemite song, my time on 2CA singing the Vegemite song. They went on about how I only mentioned Daniel Gibson. I didn't mention his sidekick, Lisa Herbert. I might actually just play the clip from last month, just to clarify that. And welcome back to Samuel's Persiflage, and now, from the year 2000, here's an appearance I had on 2CA's Big Breakfast with Daniel Gibson and Lisa Herbert.
We've been playing around with letters, mate.
Well, I think I mentioned Lisa. I could be pretty certain I did, unless I'm hearing things. So, I mean, it's an ongoing smear campaign from the person in question, I think, but, well, I mentioned Lisa, so there it is. I think that's the feedback for the month. Podcast at samuelgordonstewart.com is the email address, or you can click on the Send Spoken Feedback link on the Samuel's Persiflage website. Have you worked out what the Persiflage puzzle is yet? Oh, you have. Okay. fair enough. For the rest of us, though, let's go and draw a few more letters. No, don't tell me yet. You can tell me later at the... Well, actually, no, I'll tell you later at the end. So just keep it under your hat for the moment. Speaking of hats, let's draw three more letters out of the hat. And the first letter is K for kitten. And it's the first letter of the first word. So we'll draw out two more letters. M for Mike. No, it's not in there. So one more. O for Oscar, also not in there, but, well, we know that a couple people have worked it out. I think we've definitely given away the first word and the second word. That third word, there's not many things it could be, so I think it's going to be pretty easy this month. The answer is coming up a little bit later on. I did promise a few updates to some topics we've covered previously, and there are two topics I'd like to catch up on. Now, this time last year we spoke, on episode one in fact, we spoke to Dave Smith from the Plain English campaign in the UK about the Plain English Awards and about Plain English in general. Well, the Plain English Awards for 2006 have been announced. And, well, I thought I'd share a few of them with you. The Foot in Mouth Award for a baffling quote made by a public figure has gone to Naomi Campbell, the British supermodel. She reportedly made this comment in June. "I love England, especially the food. There's nothing I like more than a lovely bowl of pasta." Yes, Naomi, that's very British. We'll just move Britain to another country and you'll be right. Now, there were 7 Golden Bull Awards for gobbledygook or gibberish. The Crafts Council of Ireland wrote this in a circular letter. "The rewriting of the vocabulary of intemporal Irish heritage is a possible vector for submissions on the condition that this transposition is resolutely anchored in the 21st century through a contemporary lens that absolutely avoids drifting into the vernacular." Well, that's good. I'm glad that makes perfect sense. Jermaine Greer wrote this in The Guardian. "The first attribute of the art object is that it creates a discontinuity between itself and the unsynthesized manifold." Well, I'm sure that makes sense to people who understand art, but to the rest of us, that's a bit of a worry. The Bury County Court, in a general form of judgment or order, wrote, "It is ordered that the claim be adjourned generally with permission to the claimant to restore to the list without formal application not later than 1600 hours on the 12th of September 2006, whereupon the claim do stand struck out if not so restored." Okay then, could anyone enlighten me as to what that actually means? I'd be interested to know. The Eastleigh Borough Council for a notice given under the Building Act of 1984. "Hereby, in accordance with the provision of the Building Act 1984, Section 32, declares that the said plans shall be of no effect, and accordingly the said Act and the said building regulations shall, as respects the proposed work, have effect as if no plan had been deposited." Whale Thomas Hoddington's PLC wrote in a job advertisement, "Our client is a pan-European startup leveraging current cutting-edge IP, already specified, with an outstanding product value solution set. It is literally the right product in the right place at the right time. By linking high-value disparate legacy systems to achieve connectivity between strategic partners, acquisition targets, and or disparate corporate divisions, the opportunity exists to be the same, i.e. right person, etc., etc., in a growth opportunity funded by private equity capital that hits the sweet spot in major cost-driven European markets." The Fife Council wrote in a letter, they were in fact informing us that they were changing the collection date of the bins. It has been brought to our attention that due to changes made to your grey household waste bin collection dates within your new calendar, your bin will be emptied week beginning the 20th of March 2006, then next collection would not be until the week beginning the 10th of April 2006, thus having to wait 3 weeks for collection. Therefore, we are to provide a normal collection on your normal collection day, week starting the 3rd of April, and again on your new collection date, week starting the 10th of April, then thereafter every 2 weeks. Okay then. The Institute of Fiscal Studies wrote on the website document description, while the literature on non-classical measurement error traditionally relies on the availability of an auxiliary data set containing correctly measured observations, this paper establishes that the availability of instruments enables the identification of a large class of non-classical non-linear errors in variables model with continuously distributed variables. Well, I'm glad they cleared that up for me. There were also some good awards, the Plain English category for the year's clearest documents, and I think just about everything would be clearer than those examples I just read out to you. The Essential Business Guide Limited for the Essential Business Guide, World Cancer Research Fund for their Breast Awareness Card, Helena Housing for Residents Handbook, the Department of Social Development, ASDA for a product recall notice, National Osteoporosis Society, it goes on, the Inside Right category for clear internal government, went to the Ministry of Defence in the UK, the UK Trade and Investment for Our World magazine, HM Revenue and Customs, and the Department for Work and Pensions. The Media Awards, the Best National Newspaper went to The Guardian, Best Regional Newspaper went to the Newcastle Evening Chronicle, Best National Radio Program to the Jeremy Vine Show on BBC Two, Best Regional Radio Station to Pirate FM in Cornwall, Best National Television Program This Week on BBC One, Best Regional Television Program X-Ray on BBC Wales. The Web Award for the year's clearest website went to the HM Prison Service at hmprisonservice.gov.uk. And the Osborne Award for Services to Plain English went to Harriet Harman, MP. That was an exhaustive list. Alrighty then, back in August on episode 7 we spoke about school closures or proposed school closures in the ACT. We focused mainly on Dixon College, speaking to Alison Zanetti, who has had some of her children go through Dixon College and plans to have more. And, of course, we also spoke to a Labor member, not a sitting Member of Parliament, but a member of the Labor Party, Mike Hettinger, who accused the government of not having core Labor values. Now, the original plan was to close 39 schools. As I suspected at the time, that number was trimmed down quite a bit, and in some ways they have turned around and said, "Aren't we wonderful, we listen to you." Well, that's working fine on the communities which had their schools saved. 16 of them, in fact. 16 of them. Dixon College was one of the ones saved. There are still 23 which will close. Now, unfortunately, included on that list, Hall Preschool, Hall Primary School, and Thawa Preschool and Primary Schools. Those are remote, well, not necessarily remote, but they're villages just outside of Canberra, still in the ACT. And they're quite historical. I actually spoke to someone from Hall Preschool and Primary School recently. They said they intend on being there back in 2 years, which of course means they're quite confident that the opposition will get in and they'll reopen the schools. Now, the 23 schools to close, 16 schools saved. Chifley Preschool, Dixon College, Flynn Preschool, Gilmore Preschool, Gilmore Primary, Girilang Primary, Hackett Primary, Hall Preschool, Isabella Plains Primary, Melba Preschool, Mount Neighbour Preschool, Mount Rogers Primary, Reed Preschool, which is in my suburb. I went to Reed Preschool, actually. It has low numbers. I'm surprised it stayed open. South Curtin Preschool, Thawa Preschool, Western Creek Preschool. So why you would keep the Thawa and Hall Preschools open and not the primary schools is beyond me. Schools which will close: Causeway Preschool, Flynn Primary, Hall Primary, McKellar Preschool, Melrose Primary, Mount Neighbour Primary, Rivet Preschool, Rivet Primary, Thawa Primary, Western Creek Primary. schools to close at the end of 2007, Cook Preschool, Cook Primary, Girralang Preschool, Canberra High, MacArthur Preschool, Page Preschool, Village Creek Primary. Schools to close at the end of 2008. Now, this is very questionable because, of course, by then there will have been an ACT election and the opposition, if they gain power, might just overturn it. Higgins Preschool, Higgins Primary, Holt Preschool, Holt Primary, Isabella Plains Preschool. And schools to close at the end of 2010, that's looking very shaky, Village Creek Preschool. There's a number of changes and amalgamations and so on and so forth. I won't go into that right now because we'll be here for another 10 minutes if I do that. Ultimately, though, the schools which are still closing, still a lot of people upset there, and of course with other debacles going on within Canberra, including bushfire inquiries and various other things, dragways not going ahead, etc., etc., paid parking at hospitals. I'm beginning to wonder whether we will see John Stanhope facing the next election. I think it would be political suicide for the Labor Party to select him to stand at the next election. In fact, I just don't see how they can win the next election at all, but of course, there's another 2 years to go. Anything could happen between now and then, but if we were to hold an election this weekend, I think I don't think we would see Labor winning it. That's my opinion. There are plenty of people who disagree with me on that one too, but I'm sure there are plenty of people who agree as well. What's next on Samuel's persiflage? Well, I might press this button, actually. Then, well, it's time for the thought for the month, and this month I've left that job to the very capable Sir Humphrey Appleby from Yes Minister.
Up a lot, Bernard. Well, before you go home for the holidays, Minister, Sir Humphrey has something to say to you.
Oh, thank you, Bernard. Minister, just one thing. I wonder if I might crave your momentary indulgence in order to discharge a by no means disagreeable obligation, which has over the years become more or less established practice within government circles as we approach the terminal period of the year, come, of course, not financial. In fact, not to put too fine a point on it, week 51. And submit to you, with all appropriate deference for your consideration at a convenient juncture, a sincere and sanguine expectation, indeed, confidence. Indeed, one might go so far as to say hope that the aforementioned period may be, at the end of the day, when all relevant factors have been taken into consideration, susceptible of being deemed to be such as to merit a final verdict of having been by no means unsatisfactory in its overall outcome, and, in the final analysis, to give grounds for being judged on mature reflection, to have been conducive to generating a degree of gratification which will be seen in retrospect to have been significantly higher than the general average.
What are you talking about?
Well, Minister, I think Sir Humphrey just wanted to crave your momentary indulgence in order to discharge a by no means difficult...
All right, Bernard. Humphrey, at the end of the day, Minister, all these things being...
Yes, Minister?
Are you saying Happy Christmas?
Yes, Minister.
It for another month. Thank you very much there, Sir Humphrey, for that wonderful thought, and I would like to echo that, in fact. Now, we'll just hold off on that background music for a moment, because there's a couple things I do need to mention. I forgot to mention in the feedback segment that Wayne Mack actually wrote in to wish us all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. So thank you very much, Wayne. Likewise to you, and I hope the book is going well. WayneMack.com, don't touch that dial. Hits and Memories of Australian Radio. It's quite a good read. And if you're at all interested in Australian radio and the history of it, then it's just marvellous. Let's see what else was there. Of course, Paul Blunt, who we had on last month, one of 2CA's Breakfast Boys. Well, today, as this episode goes to hits the net waves, it's actually Paul's last day at 2CA. He's off to the Sunshine Coast, I believe. So, Paul, all the best up there. I hope everything works out for you. I hear you've got another baby on the way. So, congratulations. I hope everything works out well for you up there. In fact, Paul's partner, Breakfast Boy Leighton Archer, is now the program director at 2CA. And he's, in fact, selecting Paul's replacement, I believe. So, Leighton, best of luck with that job as well. Now, the persiflage puzzle. Why don't I just read out these letters, the missing letters, in order, because I think you've probably worked out roughly who this is. H-I-N-L-B-T-S. Yes, it's Catherine Lee Bates, the first person to write about Santa's wife, Mrs. Claus. She wrote about her in a poem titled Goody Santa Claus on a Sleigh Ride in the book Sunshine and Other Verses for Children, published in 1889. Now, at that time, Goody was a word which meant wife. So, I suppose, really, it wouldn't directly translate as Wife Santa Claus on a Sleigh Ride, because that just wouldn't make sense. It sounds silly. So, Wife of Santa Claus on a Sleigh Ride, I suppose it would be. Well, as I said, I'd like to echo the sentiments of Sir Humphrey Appleby and wish you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Of course, if you don't celebrate Christmas, then I just hope you enjoy this time of year anyway. I hope you get to, all of you get to meet up with some friends and family and relatives, or whoever it is, or however you're spending Christmas and the New Year period. I just hope it all works out very well for you. Now, coming up around New Year's Day, if I can get my act together, it will be on New Year's Day. There is a Best of Samuel's Persiflage for 2005-2006. Of course, there was only one episode of Samuel's Persiflage in 2005. So that's all coming up on New Year's Day, if I can get my act together. I was going to originally do a web poll and have the top three interviews of that time, but then I thought, that's just silly, because if you want to hear the interviews again, you can just go back and listen to them. So it'll be sort of the best bits of Samuel's Persiflage from that time. And I think that's just about it for the month, so Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. I'll see you in the new year with more Samuel's Persiflage and a whole new year of it. Isn't that a scary thought? You're going to have to put up with me for another year. Oh, dear me. All right, well, I hope you have a great time. I'm Samuel Gordon Stewart. Take care. We hear about too many fatalities on the roads and other places at this time of the year, so please do take care out there. I want to have you all back next year. I don't want to hear that I've lost any of you, so just take it easy out there. I hope it's a great time of the year for you. I'll see you in the new year. Until then, I'm Samuel Gordon Stewart. This has been Samuel's Persiflage for 2006. Until next time, ta-da.